This week on the show, everything in the AFC is coming up. Patriots, can they ride this wave of momentum? Aaron Rodgers has us rethinking the GOAT argument, and the Celtics starting to reestablish themselves atop the Eastern Conference. All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. This is Calling It, powered by CLNS Media. I'm Alex Barth, along with Alex Lebowitz. Mr. Lebowitz, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am good. This weird thing today, where it's like 45, 50 degrees out, but it's December 4th, which is when we're recording. I normally mention that at the top of the show. When are we getting our first winter storm of the year? I'm actually kind of looking forward to it.
Well, we kind of had one a few weeks back. It wasn't a winter storm, but it was about 6 inches, right? 5 inches, at least where I was at.
We got a dusting down here. Actually, I remember last year we had a couple instances on this show where you said, we're done with snow. That's it. We're done for the year. It's going to get nice out. And generally those comments were preceded by major blizzards. So do you have a weather prediction for us, Mr. Lebowitz?
We're not done. We're still in the first week of December. We got a couple months ahead of us. I will tell you this, though. I'm getting some pre-seasonal depression. So I'm not quite depressed yet, but I can feel it coming on.
Well, because it's still football season.
Yeah. We still have football season. Once you get into that in-between week between the AFC Championship and the Super Bowl, it's like, all right, we got the Super Bowl, but then what? And my birthday's in February.
No, and mine's in March, and I feel the same way.
And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because February is clearly the worst month of the year.
Super Bowl to Selection Sunday or Super Bowl to St. Patrick's Day is just a whole lot of nothing.
That's it.
Although we do have the AAF, the Alliance of American Football this year.
The Alliance of American Football?
Yeah.
Is that some like UFL type of thing?
Zach Mettenberger is their star player, I believe.
Mettenberger?
NFL coaches.
Wow, that's going to be great. It's going to be like NFL, except way less entertaining. It's going to be fun to watch.
Let's get into some NFL football. And you mentioned, you know, not too many reasons to be depressed just yet. Patriots are playing well. They pick up another win on Sunday. Everything else seems to be going well for the Patriots. A couple of incidents both on and off the field this weekend. We'll get to those in a little bit. But I just want to start with the Patriots on Sunday against the Vikings. I thought one of their most complete games of the year, specifically defensively. I tweeted this stat out Sunday night after the game. It's now been 5 games since the Patriots allowed a 300-yard passer, 9 games since they allowed a 100-yard rusher. Now, in there, there's some 270-yard passers, some 90-yard rushers. Not trying to say they're great, but they're not as bad as everybody thinks they are. They are a capable defense, and even with Stephon Diggs injured, Adam Thielen's a weapon, Kyle Rudolph's a weapon, Dalvin Cook is a weapon. They shut down a pretty good offense Sunday afternoon, and you have to feel really good coming away from that performance about the Patriots defense.
It's essentially the same defense we saw under Matt Patricia. They weren't super talented, but they got the job done, and their points per game total was always near the top of the league.
I think it's like 15 in the last 6 or something. The last couple games, it's been great.
They've been unreal, and it's just been a well-rounded effort. You saw it in the first game, the first play of the game. I think it was Landon Roberts who blew up Dalvin Cook, and that just set the tone. And from top to bottom, you had Trey Flowers get involved, Adam Butler, all the way to J.C. Jackson, the undrafted rookie, kind of Malcolm Butler-esque. So this has been probably the best game to watch for your Pats fan, and it's a good thing that in week 14 we're going into. I think confidence for Patriots fans and the Patriots in general is probably at a season high.
And outside of maybe the Houston Texans, who obviously are on a historic winning streak, I don't know that anybody's playing better football right now than the New England Patriots. And, you know, the Chiefs played some really good football a couple weeks ago. The Chiefs played their best football early in the year. This is generally what happens. You mentioned the Matt Patricia defense. There was one innovation I saw this week that I really liked, and it's something, you know, if you go back and you rewatch the game, I think it's re-airing on NFL Network midnight on Thursday, so that would be Wednesday going into Thursday, I believe. But if you have a DVR, if you want to go back and watch it, the Patriots employed what a lot of people on Twitter are calling the amoeba defense. It's actually called the window defense inside the walls at Gillette. That's how Belichick refers to it. with one down defensive lineman, Trey Flowers, yeah, playing over the center, and the other 10 players in constant motion. Now, that's not easy to do. Defensive IQ across the board has to be extremely high. You have to be well coached to do that. But the Patriots ran it 10 times from anywhere from second to fourth down, and the Vikings only converted the first down twice. So I like that innovation. I like seeing them do that. The last time they really used it heavily was against Peyton Manning. So first of all, that shows you what Bill Belichick thinks of Kirk Cousins. He clearly thinks highly of him. But also, I just like that we're seeing the defense now. It was very cookie cutter early in the year. It was very easy to pick apart. That was part of the problem. We're seeing them kind of get a little more in depth, get a little more complicated with their defensive play calling. And that's going to matter when you play the Chiefs a second time or when you play Houston a second time in the playoffs. That development, it was only 10 plays. But those 10 plays told me a lot. This defense does have another level they can get to if they need to get there.
Yeah, when you're going up against a team that's as stacked as that Vikings team is, even when you're home, you kind of have to throw the book at them. And that's what we saw. And I did notice that defense that they were playing. It's odd. You have one down lineman and then everyone's off the line, pretty much just fake blitzing and whatnot. It was interesting to watch and it was effective. So the question is, how often will they use that moving forward? And are they going to try to hold that off for the playoffs when they do inevitably play a team like the Chargers or the Steelers or the Chiefs? So I did notice that. I didn't know it was called the window defense. It's interesting, but I mean, leave it to Belichick to kind of differ up that defense the way he did.
Well, that goes back. Zach Cox of Nesson did a great job of breaking it down, and he found elements of it going all the way back to Belichick with Parcells in New York with the Giants. So not necessarily a new innovation, but I don't remember seeing it from this team this year or in the last couple of years. So it's good to see. You mentioned the Chiefs and the Steelers and the Chargers. I want to get into some of what happened this weekend because, once again, calendar turns to December and everything's coming up Patriots. We'll start with the Chiefs. Kareem Hunt, obviously no longer with the team. There's a lot of complicated issues at stake there. We're not going to get into the whole thing. The NFL blew it. I guess we'll leave it. I'll give you this slip. It's 1 minute, 30 seconds on kind of the NFL's handling of the situation, 30 seconds on what it means from a football point of view.
I mean, it shows that they don't really care. It's all a PR game, and we already knew that. They have not pursued these cases with the aggression that they said they would, and because of that, people are questioning their commitment to actually combating a legitimate issue in their league. But what this means for football, it's a big blow for the Chiefs. There's no doubt about it. That guy's a top five playmaker, top five running back in the NFL, and when you take away a target like that for a young quarterback like Mahomes, that's a massive detriment. It's good news for the Patriots, I guess. It's good news for the Steelers in regard to competitive advantage. I don't think this means the Chiefs are out of it by any stretch. They still have a lot of talent on that offense, and you still have to look out for them.
Yeah, I'd agree with your first part. Anything the NFL does now gets compared to Deflategate, and seeing how they handle that versus serious cases like this, that's going to be something that bites them, you know, as long as Goodell is commissioner and probably beyond that too. From a football point of view, I honestly always thought Kareem Hunt was a little overrated. I think people in New England liked him because he always seemed to have his best games against the Patriots. But what losing him does do is, well, they do have a couple other capable backs, and Spencer Ware, they signed Charcadrick West. Those are smaller receiving backs. Hunt was that downhill power back, 5'11", I think 215. So part of what made the Chiefs tough to defend is with Hunt, you had to keep some size on the field. You had to keep, you know, a bigger linebacker like a Dont'a Hightower on the field. You can't sell out in coverage. Now with these smaller, quicker backs, you can have your coverage linebackers on the field in your base set against the Chiefs, which is just going to make it a little tougher for Patrick Mahomes to get to the outside of the pocket, to break contain and things like that. So doesn't eliminate the Chiefs. If anything, almost losing to the Raiders does. You wonder what this is kind of doing to their locker room. But I still think the Chiefs have the best offense in the AFC. I still think that's a team to be afraid of, especially after you go to Arrowhead. The one other game I want to talk about, the Chargers and the Steelers. How does Mike Tomlin still have a job? As embarrassing of an effort as I've seen from a team, I mean, to play the way they did in the first half, and I'll admit, I saw glimpses of the first half. I was still finishing up at Gillette with the Patriots-Vikings coverage. but I got to see most of the second half and just what the hell were they doing? Covering a top 10 receiver in the league and Keenan Allen with a linebacker is asinine. And then those last couple of plays, I think that was the Madden strategy for Mike Tomlin. I think he told them, look, just keep jumping off sides until the refs miss it. Let him kick from the 1 yard line if they have to, which is just disgraceful. Because look, you jump off sides once, fine, whatever. You jump off sides twice, okay, you're getting twitchy. Three times, that's on purpose. So I think Mike Tomlin embarrassed his team, continued to embarrass them with the way he handled the James Conner injury, saying he should be fine before he found out he has a serious ankle injury. If I'm this, I know the Steelers don't like to fire coaches, but the Steelers need to fire their coach 100%. And one more note from that game before you go on the Chargers, that was Phillip Rivers at his best, which we don't see often, but it's scary when we do. The Chargers' biggest problem under Rivers has always been they have a tendency to choke. The Chargers with balls actually scare me. And that's what we saw on Sunday night. That's a team I don't know if I'm too excited to face in the playoffs.
Well, we know Rivers has balls. He has about 12 kids.
That's true. Fair. He's up to nine, right?
Nine. He's on his ninth. By the way. You can feel the football team with his entire. I mean,
Rivers versus the Cromarties. Put it on pay per view. Let's do it.
That'd be a good one. I think there's a few more Marlies in the Cromartie family.
He's got like 15, 16, something like that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Rivers is just a religious guy who just didn't stop having kids. Cromartie is a guy who just got around and just had a ton of them. He just bred with everybody in the country. I agree with what you said. I think Tomlin, he's been established to be an overrated a coach in the NFL. He's someone who's not a top-tier guy, and the reality is there's a lack of good coaching in the NFL, so he's not alone in that sense. I do like the Chargers, though. I really like the Chargers, and I like the Steelers, to be honest. I think this is a tough year in the AFC, and I think...
Wait, you're still worried about the Steelers?
I'm not worried about the Steelers. I just think they're a good team. I think they're playing at a pretty high level.
They're half a game up on the Ravens for the division right now. They're in a divisional hunt. They're in danger of not making the playoffs.
Yeah, Dunix, they're what, 7-4 and they had that one tie.
7-4-1, Ravens are 7-5.
And they flipped out the past couple weeks. But you got Big Ben. I think Antonio Brown showed you a lot. And the reality is they lost by 3 points to one of the best teams in the league right now. So it's not like the loss was embarrassing. They should have won it. But they have skill, and you can never count out a team like the Steelers with the consistency they've shown you for the past decade plus. With the Chargers, they've been a sneaky good team, and maybe that's because they're playing in a 30,000-person stadium, if they're even still playing there.
They are, and it's mostly in front of visiting fans, too.
Yeah, which it's depressing, and it's too bad because they are playing as well as they have been. I just think it showed you a lot. It showed you how real of a deal the Chargers are, and that they might be your biggest threat if you're the New England Patriots.
I mean, there certainly is a lot. Whoever wins the AFC West, and I believe the Chargers and Chiefs do play one more time, and that's going to be a battle-tested team coming out of that division. We had a shakeup in the NFC as well, and I actually got a firsthand experience of what that's like to some fans. We'll talk about that on the other side. This is Calling It, powered by CLNS.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
All right, welcome back to the show. This is Calling It, powered by CLNS. Alex Barth along with Alex Lubowitz. Interesting games in the NFC this weekend. The Bears and the Giants, and the Giants finally picking up a tough game. You had the Packers losing to the Cardinals, too, which was big, specifically for my dad. So to get into a little bit of the backstory here real quick, and Lebowitz, I think you're more or less filled in on this, right?
Yep.
So my dad does a pick'em pool in his office every year, and it's basically you pick a game each week, and you can only pick each team once. So once you pick the Patriots to win, you can't use them again. And you get two strikes and you're out. The last person left wins, and I think it's like a couple thousand dollars on the line. So my dad's normally out pretty early, but this year he hadn't been wrong until this week. And he picked the Packers this week over the Cardinals, thought it was a safe bet. And he's been like locked in on this for the last couple of weeks. It's all he's talked to me about. So right when I sit down to start working the Pats game, I sit down in the press box at Gillette, and I get this text from my dad. I hadn't seen the end result of the game. Aaron Rodgers is an effing joke and an effing choke. Anyone who is comparing him to Brady as the GOAT should be fired. Rodgers sucks. He can't get into field goal range against the worst team in the league. He sucks, and he doesn't talk to his family. What's up with that? He sucks. Then throughout the rest of the game, with minimal text from me and my brother, it was a group chat, he proceeds to send about 100-some text messages, just unprovokingly bashing Aaron Rodgers. It was when I finally read the chain after the game. It is one of the funniest things I have ever seen. And I sent it to Leibowitz to make sure it's not a family thing, and he said it was pretty good too.
Yeah, it's great. My favorite part is he continues to bring up Aaron Rodgers' relationship with his mother. Let's see if I can find the gems through here.
You got it?
Rodgers didn't even call his mother to see if her house burned down during the California wildfires and if she was okay. He sucks. Your dad loves that phrase. Who doesn't check on their mother when her house is surrounded by fire? In between that, my
brother, who had been at the ACC championship game this weekend, texts, Bank of America Stadium is amazing, by the way. My dad, unfazed, continues.
Yes. Who doesn't check on their mother when her house is surrounded by fire? Brady calls his mother every day and doesn't lose at home to the worst team in the league. And then he keeps going down, and he starts doing the greater than thing. So Star is greater than Favre. It's greater than Rodgers. Brady greater than Rodgers. Brees greater than Rodgers. Manning greater than Rodgers. It gets all the way down to Bledsoe is greater than Rodgers because Bledsoe calls his mother. Then he continues, seriously, what did his mom do that is so bad that he can't call her?
He also took some shots at State Farm too. And again, so basically what happened is me and my brother sent about two or three text messages during this. This wasn't all at once. Like the Pats game's going on, and I just look down at my phone. I get a text from my dad. I don't reply. 10 minutes later, there's another text from my dad, unprovoked. And by the way, I'm still getting them, Leibowitz. Like, he sent me some in the last 10 minutes. But yeah, he took some chances out of nowhere to take a shot at State Farm. State Farm should fire him. He sucks. Next text starts with, he sucks. He lost at home to the worst team in the league. That starts a rookie QB. He sucks. I would never buy one of those Ford trucks. They look good for a very little while, then they break down all the time, just like Aaron Rodgers. Wouldn't count on State Farm to come through for me in a tough situation either. Brady drives an Audi. Rodgers drives a Ford. Would anyone take a Ford over an Audi? Audi gave Brady an Audi. Rodgers does ads for Ford. Audi would never give Rodgers a car.
It's amazing. It's the ultimate. I know your dad's not a massive gambler, but it's the same type of thing.
He's not normally somebody who's out there criticizing athletes. The only athlete I really ever heard him criticize was Bucky Dent. Outside of that, he's never been one of those kind of fans.
Well, Aaron Rodgers does deserve more crap for not talking to his family. There's no reason behind that. Although, to be fair, we've only heard one side. Maybe his family like murdered his dog or something. I don't know. Maybe they did something horrible that is unforgivable, but probably not. The more realistic thing is he's just not a great son and not a great person. At least it's more fun when you're talking crap about him, which your father did, and he did not fail to mention his relationship with his own mother.
And I forgot this at the end, and I called them on the phone after he brought this up too. I asked him if Cliff Kingsbury was better than Aaron Rodgers, and he said Kingsbury's going to get a good coaching job, and he always does better than dating Danica Patrick. And my dad seems very confused as to why Aaron Rodgers is dating Danica Patrick. He seems to think Aaron Rodgers could do way better, but chooses not to, which I don't know where that came from. But apparently, according to my dad, Danica Patrick, very undesirable.
She's not undesirable. Here's the thing. I will defend Aaron Rodgers here. Danica Patrick is a very impressive person. And she's very attractive. I can definitely see the appeal in someone of even Rodgers' caliber being able to get any woman he wants wanting to date a Danica Patrick. He already had Olivia Munn. He's been on that side of it.
So wait, do you want to hear that? So these are the texts I've gotten in the last 10 minutes. Lynn Dickey, I don't really know who that is, greater than Rodgers. Allstate, 3 greater than State Farm. The soldiers that won the Revolutionary War, greater than a meat packing company. I'm assuming that's relating to the Patriots and the Packers. Giselle, 6 greater than Danica. Nobody's disagreeing with that. Bridget Moynihan, greater than Olivia Munn.
I don't know about that.
Five greater than one. I assume he's talking about Super Bowl rings. Making your coach look good greater than making your coach get fired.
That's true.
Greater than Green Bay. And here he ends it on this note, which is actually very clever. New England Felger greater than Wisconsin Felger.
That's funny. I like that last one. I do. Yeah, it's great. It's great. I'll see. Dad's being unfair about the dating thing. He is. But it's still very funny. It's good stuff.
I'll say this. So I didn't tweet it out. My dad really didn't want me to tweet it out, and I get that. He's a private guy, but it's really good content. If we get 100 likes on the tweet for this show, I will tweet out the screen caps of the conversation.
Good luck.
If we get 100 likes, so if you're listening, spread it, share it. You can say why. It's fine. If we get 100 likes on this tweet, I will send out the full conversation.
Just attach that little note to a tweet in which you're sharing a really cool Patriot statistic that you had to dig up.
Oh, actually took me a second to realize what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yes. You had a viral tweet. We didn't even talk.
Yeah, I went viral over the weekend. I'll say this credit to the Patriots PR staff. It was in the game notes this week. I just kind of picked it out. I wanted to tweet it before the game. And my phone died as I was typing it out. And then I didn't want to tweet it during the game cause it would jinx it. So I was just hoping it would hold up. And I lucked out and it did. So I was able to get it out post game.
There you go. But that was good timing. I don't think it would have gotten the same amount of interactions had it not been posted after the game.
I had another one that got like 10 retweets this morning. So I'm feeling it, up over 1,000 followers. Big day right here.
Congratulations. I'm not even halfway there. One of these days.
You'll get there. Real quick on the Rodgers situation, obviously it relates to the Patriots a little bit with Josh McDaniels. Any thoughts on, the two guys I'm looking at, Josh McDaniels, although I don't think Rodgers would like him that much because I don't think Rodgers wants the ball out of his hands as much as McDaniels likes to run trick plays. The other name I'm looking at, Urban Meyer. I wonder if Green Bay takes a look at him. I know Skip Bayless brought this up this morning. I promise I thought of it before he said that. But don't sleep on Urban Meyer to the Packers either.
Yeah, I actually wrote that down as well. I know it's been floated around a little bit. I think it would be a really bad look if Urban Meyer told Ohio State that he's retiring and then takes an NFL.
Since when has Urban Meyer cared about bad looks, if we're being honest?
That's fair, but even this would – I think he's going to take 1 year off. But the reality is, this job won't be available next year, and a job this caliber won't be available next year. So maybe there is that exception. Maybe he does take the bait. Who knows? I don't know who else would. I don't think Josh McDaniels would be a good fit. I don't think he's a great NFL coach in the first place. I think maybe someone from the college ranks could – jump up and take that position. It's not going to be Todd Bowles. It's not going to be Hugh Jackson or anyone else who's gotten the pink slip this season. I don't know, man. I think we can see a dark horse here and get someone who is an offensive coordinator in the NFL who's not Josh McDaniels, or a defensive coordinator in the NFL, because there's no obvious name that sticks out to me. Mike McCarthy, they clearly needed to make a move. I don't know if midseason was the time to do it. But it was a move that had to be done nonetheless. The question is, will you get someone in there that meshes with Aaron Rodgers and that Aaron Rodgers likes? Because that should be the priority for that organization.
Well, I think your dark horse right now, just to kind of tie that all together, is Joe Philbin, the interim, who has an offensive background. And I think they're essentially giving him an audition right now. And if Rodgers likes the next couple of weeks what they do, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't maybe try Philbin just for, give him a 1 year, see what you can do contract. Because remember, Aaron Rodgers is 35. So you got to figure this out. You got to figure it out quick. If you think Philbin's the guy, give him a shot. But if he's not, you got to be able to move on right away.
And I think that's the only reason why they fired McCarthy midseason, because they don't see anyone as an obvious successor to McCarthy. So you bring in Philbin, and you said, I think that's a really good point. This is an audition for him. Maybe he's the guy. He's someone we have some confidence in. And if Aaron Rodgers likes him, although I'm not going to be
Rodgers doesn't like anybody, including his mother.
That's true. Go ahead, Barry. If Barry has taught us anything, it's going to be tough. And when you go from Mike McCarthy to Joe Philbin, talk about someone with zero personality. I just don't know how that's going to mesh. We'll see how it works out. Maybe he'll surprise me. Maybe it's all about the play calling and his football mind rather than how he controls a locker room. But I'm not all that confident in Philbin. I my gut tells me they're going to have to go elsewhere during the offseason.
All right, two good segments of football talk. I enjoyed that, and obviously a lot more coming up. I do want to touch on the Celtics, the NBA, some fun stuff going on there. We'll be back on the other side. This is Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back. You are, of course, listening to Callin' It, powered by CLNS Media, who originally made their name with the Boston Celtics. A lot of people don't know this. CLNS stands for Celtics Late Night Show, the original CLNS podcast. And so a lot of the guys over there, I know they're very happy because the Celtics, last time we talked, the world was crumbling. Suddenly looks like they've got their feet under them a little bit.
Yeah, they're looking a lot better. You have a guy in Kyrie Irving who's kind of answered the call and taken up more of that leadership role. Gordon Hayward's returned to his former self, which is nice to see. And I think something that at least I thought was going to happen eventually. And they got a really good win on Saturday night against the Timberwolves. So I think the criticism was warranted. It's still early in the season. We still have 75% of the season to go. And after that win on Saturday night, I think the confidence is much higher than it was, this time last week.
So one thing about Gordon Hayward that you mentioned, and this goes to something I said last time on the show, I wanted Marcus Smart in the starting lineup. I wanted Gordon Hayward coming off the bench. I now have numbers to back that up. So since they moved Gordon Hayward to the bench, that was back on November 19th, the team is 4-2. Hayward is averaging 14 points a game, and he's rebounding better than he ever has in his career. He's averaging 6.2 rebounds during that stretch. Meanwhile, Marcus Smart, he has started the last three games for the Celtics. How about these numbers in those three games? He's averaging 8.7 points, but he's shooting 46% from three with five assists in three blocks a game. His average plus minus, just over plus 15 points. Marcus Smart needs to be in the starting lineup for this Celtics team. He brings an energy and an edge that nobody else on the roster can really give them. And hey, it's only a bonus that Hayward's playing well off the bench. I think if they want to keep this turnaround going, Marcus Smart needs to be in the starting lineup.
I agree. I think it says a lot about a guy that he gets paid during the offseason and he comes back and plays just as hard, if not harder, than he did prior to earning that contract. He's a spark plug. He's someone who gives that team an edge. And I think everyone was kind of caught in this preconceived notion that he's only a bench guy and he's great spark off the bench. But this has kind of ignited this starting five and this lineup and really the entire team. It's been great to watch, and it's a necessity, really. He's a big-time player on this team. He's a big-time player on any winning team. And to have him come out and perform like he did when the effort's been lackluster and the execution has been as well, it's huge. You can't overstate it.
And by the way, the plus-minus in those last five games, which the Celtics are 4-1, and I know people don't really like plus-minus, but it's a great stat for guys like Marcus Smart. He was plus 15. They won by 18 against Atlanta. He was plus 12. They won by 17 against New Orleans. He was plus 33. They won by 33 against Cleveland. He was plus 1. They were plus 9 against Minnesota. So when he's in the game, that's when they're doing most of their damage, both offensively and defensively. That's when they're playing their best balanced basketball, and Marcus Smart is going to help you with that.
Yeah, and the question now is Jaylen Brown – when's he going to come back to full form, and when is he going to pick up the pace? I think there's a lot of catching up to do with this team still. I have confidence in them still. We said last time we recorded an episode, I forget what the exact day was, but we were worried. We were all worried, me, you, and Ryan included, in this team. But they had the talent. They had the coaching. They had the front office. Is there a move to be made? I think probably yes, there still is something to do for Ainge. But it's great to see them get a win like they did on Saturday and Thursday. They got the Knicks, and you hope against a team that's been as bad as the Knicks, they can pull it together.
And remember, they already lost badly to the Knicks.
That's true.
Once. One more thing we should talk about, because it was a big story today, and I can't believe I didn't think of it when we recorded the open earlier. I guess I could re-record it, but I'm lazy. We got major NHL news today. Seattle is getting an NHL team, much deserved. Quebec City can go screw. I think Seattle was the right place to put it. And right before we started the segment, Lebowitz, you brought up a great question. is this the indicator that now the NBA is going to return to Seattle too, and Seattle will become the four sports city it deserves to be, unless you don't count the Mariners as a professional baseball team anymore, which I know some people don't. Real whirlwind couple of days for Seattle sports fans.
Yeah, you get rid of Robbie Cano and your big time closer, and you're getting an NHL team. You win some, you lose some, but you got to be happy with the news that they're going to have hockey up there in the Northwest.
I mean, and I think, look, I said there was no shot a team in Vegas was going to succeed. I thought that it was going to be a disaster, and that team was going to end up being moved to Seattle. And then they were going to add another team, whether it be Quebec City, Hartford, Baltimore, or wherever. I was wrong about that, so I'm hesitant to talk about the Seattle team, but I think they'll actually fare well in Seattle. You've got a natural rivalry with the Vancouver Canucks. I think that'll be good. You've got clearly a devoted fan base. I mean, that city even loves its MLS team. They sell out their NFL stadium for MLS games. I think that team's going to do really well up there. I think that's a good spot for hockey. I think the city's changed a lot since the NHL left. And with Vegas, I was kind of dreading it because I felt like it was just going to be crammed down our throats because of how non-traditional a market it was. And there wasn't a lot, you know, of built-in knowledge of the sport and enthusiasm for the sport in the area. I think Seattle is going to be a lot more natural. It's going to be a less artificial transition bringing that 32nd team in, and it's bringing a 32nd team in, so the league will now be balanced, which is just going to make it feel a lot better.
Yeah, I think it will. That I don't know about thrive. I think it will do very well. That team will do very well in Seattle. I do worry about the proximity to Vancouver and already existing fan base that they probably have.
I think the national border helps. I think the fact that it's not the same country will – look, if they were the same country, right, like Seattle-Portland, that would be tough.
Yeah.
Seattle-Vancouver, I think you – there's that – you know, you have a team now in your country you can root for. I think that changes it a little
bit. So I'd ask, like, what's the affiliation with, like a Toronto and a Buffalo Bills type of team? Like, is there a big fan base there? I just don't know, because that is a good point.
Look this up. I've never really found that there's a strong connection. If anything, I think it's mostly Sharks fans.
Okay.
That are up there.
Okay, so, gotcha.
And that's, I mean, that's – I think you're pretty comfortable abandoning the Sharks in that situation.
Yeah, that's a decent drive. You're talking about 3 hours compared to like I'm not even going to guess what that is. But I saw something on Twitter earlier today. It was from Pete Blackburn. I don't know if it was sarcastic. I don't think it was, but I thought it was a decent point, even if it was sarcastic. Maybe the NFL should not be expanding. Maybe they should be downsizing. What did I say?
I almost did that like 10 times.
You said
NFL. NFL.
I say NFL, NHL. Maybe they should be
expanding. You're right.
It should be downside. Yeah, because it's clearly the number four league. Does it make money? Yeah, every league makes money. The MLS makes money. But you have a lot of markets that are not seeing the ticket sales that you'd want to see, that don't see the fan engagement that you'd want to see in the first place. And maybe those cities just don't deserve teams. So I think it's just an odd move to expand when you have a big problem in that department already. That doesn't mean Seattle's a bad place. If anything, maybe they should have relocated a team to Seattle. But there's a few markets that I just don't know if they should still be around in the NHL.
No, see, I mean, Seattle definitely deserved a team, but you're right. Would they have been better off moving in Arizona or a Carolina up there than adding another team? And, you know, that's another 25 players in the league. And do you end up with Milan Lucic being the captain of the Seattle Metropolitans in 2021? The one other interesting, and it kind of goes along with your point, I forget who had this on Twitter, but between expansion and movement, half of the league has changed since Jaromir Jagr's second year. Think about that.
Yeah, it makes sense.
He hasn't officially retired yet, right?
Not officially. I mean, he's not on a roster, though. I know that. He's about, what, 48?
I mean, it'll be one of those things where he'll get signed after the trade deadline. He is on a roster in the Czech Republic.
Okay. Yeah, he's still got gambling debt he has to pay off, allegedly.
Probably.
Probably. We can change that allegedly to probably.
Oh, no, it's actually his rights are owned by the Flames. He was assigned to this team I can't pronounce in the Czech Republic.
Really?
So he can come back to the Flames, I guess.
I guess so. That'd be fun to watch. I'd accept him with open arms.
Jaromir Jagr should just play till he's 70. Just
honestly,
as a novelty.
He should.
Fun to watch.
It's awesome. It's like Jamie Moyer out there.
I've seen, and I think you too, every sports league completely turn over their rosters of the four major sports in my lifetime, with the exception of Jaromir Jagr.
Our lifetime?
Yeah. When were you born?
95.
No, so you're not, because I know my brother's also waiting on Vinatieri, and he's 97.
Vinatieri was 96. He came to the league. No?
Right. So my brother's still waiting on Jagr and Vinatieri. But like I've looked this up. With Bartolo Colon retiring, I've seen all three leagues completely turn over their players, and there's only one NHL. Jagr's the last player left who was still playing sports professionally before I was born.
Yeah, I think that checks out. I can't think of anyone else. I mean,
I don't think there's anybody who was playing in 95 that wasn't playing in 94. Yeah, all the way around.
Vince Carter's kind of close. Vince
Carter, when is he? No, I think he's later than that. I think he's like 99.
Maybe he's 99, but he's approaching 40 years old. He's been around.
Carter's 98.
So he's a few years behind. So yeah, there's a lot of guys. Jagr would be great to come back. Maybe he should be on that Seattle team. Maybe they'll bring him back.
I would love it. I think that would be a great way to put some asses in the seats to start. All right, that's going to just about do it for us. You got any final thoughts there, Lebowitz?
Any final thoughts? Not really. No, I don't think so. I think one more thing on the NHL thing. I just think when you have these expansion drafts, you are ruining the quality of the league. You're saturating it. You're saturating the talent. You're diluting it. And I just don't know if that's good for the game. I think that they should try to maybe perfect the markets that they're in before going somewhere else, even if that place is a great destination. You said it. There's been so much turnover in the NFL or the NHL rather, in regard to moving teams, expanding or what have you. I just think they're trying to walk before they crawl here.
I agree with you, with the caveat that you can't have 31 teams. They had to either go up or down one. You can't have an odd number of teams. My final thought, shocker, college football. Jalen Hurts on Saturday pulled a Drew Bledsoe, lost his starting job to the future greatest quarterback of all time, but comes back in a huge game and leads his team to the win. It was amazing. I love Jalen Hurts. I love Tua Tagovailoa. That game was the best. Alabama's going to win another championship this year. I think Notre Dame's wildly overrated. I think Clemson's had a cakewalk schedule. Oklahoma scares me a little bit. But they got to go up to eight teams, because with four teams, you're going to end up with all three of these games are probably going to be routes. I think Alabama routes Oklahoma. I think that Clemson routes Notre Dame. And then I think Alabama routes Clemson.
I think you go to six teams and have the number one and two seed have a bye.
Even that would be better. Even if that means we'd be putting Urban Meyer in this year, which I don't know why people thought Ohio State was in. I don't know why people thought Georgia was in. That was never going to happen. Conference championship games still matter. And the NCAA, say what you will about them, way too image conscious to put Urban Meyer in with multiple losses. You weren't going to see that. It was out of the question. But it
would have been a horrible look.
Yeah. Anyway, that'll do it for us this week. We'll be back next week with another show, more football, more basketball, more hockey, all of it. You can follow us online at Calling It Podcast. And that's on Twitter. Check us out online. We're hosted on clnsmedia.com. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. This has been Calling It. Thank you very much for watching. Listening. I do this all the time with the video feed. Thank you very much for listening. Bye.